Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to United Hour, your one-stop shop for all things Manchester United. I'm your host, Nick.
And I'm Imran.
We are coming to you on Tuesday. We tried to avoid recording this podcast because we're going to unfortunately have to talk about a really awful match against Brentford. But we decided to, you lucky people had to listen to this one. I mean, I missed the last podcast, which was that epic Liverpool win show. I mean, yeah, I was away for work, so unfortunately I couldn't get on it. That was the one I wanted to be on. You know, highlight of the season, the greatest result we've had for a while. I think we, you know, there was some chat in the thread on Red Cafe about, is this the best match we've had at Old Trafford against Liverpool? And yes, definitely one of the best I could remember. So yeah, we're on a high. We're talking about how good things are. Maybe we can build some momentum, but no, that's all gone completely out the window. I mean, it was sad that we had that international break in the middle that just meant that that result was kind of just, you know, gone now. No momentum from it, no way to push from it. And yeah, we're back to just this up and down season that we've had all the way along.
I don't think it would have made a difference. I mean, we've seen us this season, momentum isn't a thing, turning corners isn't a thing. I genuinely think if you had played this game against Brentford 3 days after the Liverpool game, it would have been the exact same sort of performance.
No, I don't agree with that.
A blind bit of difference.
We've
had big results early in the season. You know, we had that win against Villa.
No, we had a couple of periods where we did, you know, win 3-4 in a row, had some, and especially, and the biggest problem with that international break is so many players go away, they've played two games, they're traveling here, there, and there, and then, you know, they come back a few days after. And I don't know. I mean, all right, I can say, I know you're going to say it's nothing to do with that because we've been this bad again and again and again all season. Anyway, I already know what's coming. But yeah, for me, it is a shame. Like I said, that international break just killed anything. Lots of players coming back there, coming. But yeah, there's no getting away from this is, I mean, is it the worst performance of the season? There's a thread on Red Cafe basically saying how bad was this performance. And I think some people are going maybe a bit OTT because I saw a couple of people in that thread saying it's the worst performance in the last decade since Fergie left, basically, which I think is a bit much because I actually remember being in the stadium for Brentford away last season and we were 4-0 down at half time. So I'm pretty sure this is not the worst performance in the last 10 years. But I think we could say it is one of the worst performances off this season for sure.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely up there, which is hilarious because we probably should have won this game, which is ridiculous to think about. But yeah, it's definitely just an all round game, as an all round performance. It's one of the worst. It's a miracle we didn't lose. I'm trying to think what West Ham away was pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, Bournemouth
Newcastle
at home
away was quite bad as well.
Bournemouth at home is one of the worst, like, I can remember. You know, and we...
Yeah, Bournemouth at home.
We lost to Fulham at home a couple of weeks ago.
It's in lovely contention. I think that's the thing. It's in amongst some wonderful other games that we've played this season. But yeah, it was just really, really bad. A terrible performance. Brentford had over 30 shots. I think what they broke the record for touches in the opposition box. They should have comfortably won this game. And we just weren't in it at all, really. I think what was our XG? ended up being around 0.6 or something.
The stats are awful. So XG, Brentford are at 3.2. We're at 1, basically, 0.99. 31 shots versus 11. 81 touches in our box versus 16 in theirs. And, you know, this is off the context as well of a Brentford team that are in poor form. I think they've lost.
Oh, yeah, like, Brentford are not a good side.
The most games of, like, any team in the top five leagues kind of in the last 6 months or something.
And they've got their whole, I think most of their back four is missing. I know Ben Mee's out. I think some of their other, Ethan Pinnock's out as well. He's a big player for them. So, yeah, they've got, they had some big players missing in defence as well. Terrible.
Yeah, that is the thing. I mean, they've had slight upturn since kind of Ivan Toney's come back in the team, but only slight. So, yeah, this was really bad. And as I say, for me, there is something on that international break. There is something that lots of our players were away coming back. But still, it doesn't excuse the absolute abject performance against a bang average Brentford team. I mean, they hit the woodwork four times. I mean, even at halftime, how we managed to be 0-0 was amazing. How we managed to then go into the 90th minute at 0-0 was even more ridiculous. But yeah, it was then a totally crazy end to the game. As you say, we could have actually won this match.
We should have won this game because after we got that goal, which was out of nothing, complete lifeline, to have the mentality to then go and concede is shocking. And I was saying this at the time, I would have been less annoyed if we had lost this game 2-0. If they'd scored in the 30th minute and the 70th minute and we'd lost 2-0, I'd have probably said, yep, that was about right, and then I'd have gone on with the rest of my day. But the fact that we actually managed to score a goal and then concede again moments afterwards just displayed another level of stupidity that, you know, we'd already displayed a great level of stupidity for 90 minutes. So to just add another layer onto that was just incredibly irritating. But yeah, we should have seen out the game. It was really poor that we didn't.
Yeah, definitely. And I do know what you mean. It kind of makes it worse, as if like that performance wasn't bad enough, that we actually had a chance of the classic smash and grab. I think the manager at Brentford, he was talking about the football gods and not being with them. But yeah, slightly restoring his faith that at least they got a point out of this. But yeah, look, we did absolutely deserve. As I said, I was in the stadium last season when we lost this game 4-0. And it would not have been undeserving for Brentford to get a similar kind of result out of it, really. As I say, their XG was at 3.2. They hit the woodwork many times. Onana pulled off a couple of good saves. I mean, yeah, he's the one who's kept us in it. I know, you know, we were slagging him out a lot earlier in the season. He's now, I think I saw the stat that he's the Premier League goalie who's actually stopped the most goals of anyone, you know, of based on saves and everything of saves that should go in. You know, they start having a kind of XG for goalies now. And I think he's more or less top of that list now for Premier League. I mean, that's the thing. Everybody still talks about him being awful, but nearly all of his really big errors were in the Champions League. So his stats in the league this year are actually pretty good.
I was one of those who thought his league, I mean, obviously his Champions League form was terrible. We've been through that many times. I didn't think he was great in the league at the start. I think there was a couple of goals where you think, yeah, okay, it's not an error, but you'd think he might do a bit better now. But since he's come back from AFCON, he's been, yeah, really good form, showing signs of a really good keeper. In games like that, he's kept us in it. He's even making some good saves low down, which were kind of with his kryptonite earlier in the season, those getting low down to those kind of shots. And he made one really good save in this game from a low down shot. So, yeah, it's keeping us in these games when we don't deserve to be. Just a shame we couldn't get a clean sheet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was actually a rare occasion where he's played the same starting 11 as that Liverpool game. So even though, as I said, they have all been off on an international break, we didn't have any major injury issues when they came back. And in fact, you know, players are coming back from injury. The only kind of plus point off this game was that Martinez is back in there, Casemiro's back in there, Maguire's back, you know, all these players.
But then Lindelof and Varane also went off injured in the game.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, that each time we think we might be getting back to some kind of fully fit squad, it just goes, you know, two steps forward, one steps back. And I think that is part of the reason why we do end up conceding this late goal. is that, you know, there was an entire change of central defence. I mean, at half time, first Varane goes out, Lindelof then is after that. So, yeah, and I don't know how ready Lisandro Martinez was for this game.
Yeah, he didn't look the most ready footballer I think I've ever seen in my life. He looked a bit rusty, let's say. Hopefully he is fully fit, but he did look a bit rusty when he came on, and maybe that's to do with it. I think he deals with Tony. I think a Martinez with a couple of games under his belt deals with Tony a lot better for their goal. But really, the goal's on Aaron Wan-Bissaka for being lazy, jogging out anyway, and playing everyone onside. And then we're kind of at six and sevens there, and everyone's kind of panicking, and no one's actually picking up it. Like, you've got, when you've got, what, we had like two players trying to block a shot on the line plus the keeper, instead of actually marking the man, then you know you're at panic stations at that point and not actually trying to sort out the danger. So it was poor in terms of just, you know, team organisation. And
it was absolute panic stations. Yet again, it's a cutback as well, and nobody marking a player as a free shot. I mean, I think Mount and McTominay are kind of in our six-yard box when they should be out marking midfielders, basically.
They're just panicking. They're panicking and not actually picking up a man. Or trying to stop a cut. Well, yeah, trying to be in a good position to stop the cutback. It's just, yeah, it's not great. The other point I was going to make was, well, I can't remember now, but yeah, terrible.
I mean, yeah, look, Casemiro's definitely rusty as well. Martinez is definitely rusty. They both made a couple of really awful passes just after they came on. And it's exactly those passes after kind of you've been out a while and you're trying to do something that you know you can normally do, but your leg isn't managing to deliver what your brain's kind of compute, basically. I mean, yeah.
That was it. That was the point I wanted to make. There must be, or maybe not must be, but I put maybe this point on the cap. Is there a correlation between the fact that I feel like most of our injuries come on our back line, and it feels like there's just injuries constantly with our centre backs, and it's a good job we have five centre backs. Is it something to do with the fact that we just get pulled up? We're pulled all over the place in pretty much every single game we play. Like, I feel like our defenders are the busiest people on the pitch every single game, because there's such that obviously there's the well documented hole in our midfield, and the gap between the defenders and the midfield is so huge, and our defence having to cover a lot of space, both running backwards, running forwards, just defending all over the place. And maybe that has something to do with the number of injuries.
Yeah, there could well be something in that. I mean, the stat that keeps getting rolled out again and again is about the crazy amount of chances that we give up every game. You know, we're right up there with the likes of Sheffield United and Luton in shots kind of conceded. I mean, I have said before that you do need to look at the context that there's often a lot of low quality shots, you know, from the opposition, that they're not positions they should be scoring from. But I mean, still in this Brentford game, though, we have given away over a 3xG. It's not always like that, even though the shots are high, but in this one it is.
Yeah, this was a bit of an anomaly in the fact that actually Brentford did have some decent chances in there, and they were getting into the box. I think a lot of the time, players have such a free run through our midfield, they get to the edge of the box and they just have a pop because they've got the space and time, and then we kind of close them down there, whereas actually Brentford were getting into the box, getting around us and actually getting some decent chances away. So yeah, it was just a poor show all around, really.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, we do have to give some credit to Mason Mount. He did score a goal. We were winning in this game with a few minutes left. I know you've been consistent since the day we signed him that you didn't want him at the club. You didn't think it was a good signing. I still have said that, look, I want to give him a chance. He is definitely a good player in there somewhere. But, you know, whether he's the right signing, whether we paid too much is another question. But yeah, look, he's at least got his name on the score sheet. And it's a shame they'll kind of be a bit forgotten, because in the end, it wasn't the winning goal that it should have been. But it was still a really good finish at an ideal time of the game, really.
Well, the thing is, Mount is, I've always said Mount is like a decent player, like decent. My point with him is, even when he was in England, I was like, yeah, he's fine. He's a fine footballer. And as a fine footballer, he will score goals and he can do assists and stuff like that. Get his stats up, and he has for Chelsea. And so it's not surprising you can see him finishing that. I've said it, under a new manager next season, I think Mount could probably be an important player for us. I don't know if he's going to set the world alight or anything, because I'm never sure Mason Mount will ever set the world alight, but I think he could be an important player for us under a new manager. I think I can see a world where that happens. Still doesn't take away from the fact that we shouldn't have signed him for that much money at that time that we did. But yeah, it's nice to see him score, contribute to the team. Hopefully he can stay fit now for the rest of the season and keep contributing. I'm not sure where he plays. He was off the left there. I don't see us dropping Rashford for him. But you could argue we probably should, or another poor Rashford game. Obviously, everyone was poor in this game. It's hard to single any one person out because I think pretty much all of our outfield players were terrible, I thought, in one way or another. But yeah, maybe he should come in there, probably go back into midfield and then keep on. I mean, we've already got a hole in midfield, so we might as well have two attacking midfielders there. You're going to have a massive hole. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see how he uses him for the rest of the season, though, unless he's just a bench option, which I don't know. It's hard to see him, a £55 million player, being a bench option, and that's what Ten Hag had in mind for him.
I mean, I think Ten Hag did have in mind for him to be starting as one of two central midfielders rather than a more attacking role that we might have been used to seeing him in. But yeah, he wasn't playing there in this game. As you say, he came in a more kind of left midfield attack role. And did work out over there. I mean, the midfield for this game was Mainoo, McTominay, which was the same against Liverpool. I remember pre-match against Liverpool being very worried about that midfield. I didn't think McTominay should have started that game, and thought we should have gone a bit more kind of defensive in, whether it was, you know, Casemiro was missing that day, so it would have probably been Amrabat. But in the end, it did work out against Liverpool, and he's kind of stuck with it. But yeah, McTominay, again, was pretty anonymous in this game, where he often is from that kind of position. You know, he seems to do his best work around the box, like Mount, maybe. You know, again, he's a player that maybe can and has contributed massively, but when he plays in a more central midfield role, you're never quite sure, is he doing enough defensively? His passing is not that great. You know, what exactly is he there for? Like I said, worked out against Liverpool, but didn't work out in this game at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about Liverpool game, though, we did give up loads of chances. We gave up, what, I think, like 25 shots in that game. Obviously, there's extra time included as well, but Liverpool weren't really doing much in extra time, so actually. But yeah, we gave up a lot of shots. It's just that game was more of a ding-dong. And therefore, that midfield kind of works in a way, because you're getting up the pitch, they're getting up the pitch. It's just back and forth, kind of running on vibes kind of feel. Whereas this game against Brentford, they were giving it all and we were giving nothing. So we didn't turn it into chaos. We didn't turn it into a mess. They just controlled the game, and we couldn't do anything really. And that, yeah, that's where that midfield gets exposed badly, because if it's not chaotic, if we're not a chaos team, then we're quite poor.
That kind of is now the title that's been given to Ten Hag's system, is Ten Hag Chaos Ball. I mean, and it was absolutely apt in that Liverpool game, you know, where we ended up with Bruno at centre-back, Maguire up front, Anthony left-back, and can't even remember what now, but yeah, it was pretty crazy. It does seem to be by design, though, that he's almost quite happy to give up the midfield. And the only time it ever works is when our transitions, quick turnovers and counter-attacks work. And this was one of the days, like many other days this season, where it just didn't work, you know. Each time the out ball is not finding the right player, not managing to string, never mind three passes together, even two passes together. And that's why we just didn't really create much at all until, yeah, very late in the game. So, yeah, look, I guess we're going to say, yeah, we're very happy to come out of this game with a point, basically, right?
Well, no, because we should have won. But all things considered, we were lucky to get a point, but I don't think we should be happy about it, because that is a game, really, that Man United should be winning. But we were a far cry from winning it, and yet we could have won it. So what to make of that?
Yeah, and maybe that's another good summary of our season, you know, where none of it quite makes sense, but we are still in the running for various things. And yeah, that's the way it rolls on. But yeah, as I said, we didn't even want to do this podcast. We were going to try and record after the Chelsea game, but in the end, we've stuck in there. We don't want to talk about this match anymore. It was a really poor one. We will take a quick break there. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about, again, what's going on in the boardroom with Ineos. Another new name thrown out there over there. Look ahead to the matches coming up and bits of things going on around MU Women as well. back for part two of the podcast. As I said, talked about that really, really awful Brentford game. More interestingly, at the moment, has been the talk again in the boardroom. We already know that Ineos have been trying to get in Dan Ashworth to be our director of football. That is still very up in the air. No agreement reached with Newcastle. Looks like they're really digging their heels in and saying, you know, we want 20 million compensation if you want this guy, and if not, we're going to make him sit it out. Now, there has been an official approach for Jason Wilcox, who is currently at Southampton, and I think they're talking about him coming in as a technical director. He's actually now resigned from his role at Southampton yesterday. But again, Southampton have come out saying, we're not happy about this approach. He's got contract clauses. We want compensation. So it's kind of seems to be following a similar path, unfortunately.
Yeah, I find it weird. Like, these aren't footballers. These are just like men with jobs.
It's becoming like the transfer market. It is becoming like the transfer market. Yeah, and maybe it is a weird one because, look, everybody knows how it goes with players, right? There's windows where you can buy and sell players. You have to go to the other club, agree a fee, and then you agree something with the player. Now, these kind of guys now are becoming like, as if maybe they should start saying the same. You can't move these players on, and these guys, whether it's director of football, sporting director, head of recruitment, whatever, in the transfer window either. I don't know. You know, it's all a bit weird. I mean, I still remember to the days when player transfers could happen any day, right? You know, it would just be on...
Yeah, you'd find out on teletext.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, CFAX, teletext was how you found out. You'd be at school. Rumours would go round. Oh, we bought Andy Cole today. And everybody would be like, oh, no, no, it's not. And you wouldn't know until you got home whether it was actually true or not. The amount of times somebody told me we'd bought Matt Letizier at school, we bought him about six times, but in the end, it never actually happened. But yeah, I can't remember what year it was that transfer windows first started, but we're obviously just used to that nowadays for players. But for these, what you call, you know, boardroom guys, it's a whole different scenario. I assume that we will manage to get some agreement for Jason Wilcox. I can't imagine that Southampton, I mean, no offence to them, but are going to as strongly fight as maybe Newcastle might do. So I imagine this deal will get done. I think that is the big thing that Ineos know. They need to get somebody in ASAP who can start working for next season. Because we know there's a big mess to sort out until we get this right structure in. There's nothing we can start moving on. And yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say much until anything is done and actually announced. The only guy we know who is announced is definitely coming in is Omar Berada. But even he is not officially starting in his role until the summer. I was chatting with a mate the other day and he said, look, I don't understand all these roles. You know, it all gets a little bit confusing. Who are all these guys? What are they going to be? So, you know, in the past, we obviously had Woodward, who was then replaced by Richard Arnold, and they were CEO. And Omar Berada will be that guy. He is at the top of the tree. Below him, what Ineos want is Dan Ashworth to be, you'd say, sporting director or director of football, basically the head guy who's in charge of the footballing side. There will be another guy who's just in charge of the financial and corporate side of the club below Berada as well. So then you get two different sides of the tree. In the past, you know, our top guy has always been a more financial guy, Woodward, Arnold. So now they're trying to focus more on the footballing side. So yeah, Berada at the top, Ashworth below him. Jason Wilcox would then come in below Ashworth. And apparently his title will be technical director. So it's more about style of football. It's more about trying to join up what the academy are doing to the first team. Make sure all the way through the club, everybody is playing the same kind of style of football. And yeah, this is the kind of thing that we've never really had as we've jumped from people like Louis van Gaal playing possession football to Jose Mourinho playing completely the opposite. And we've never had that kind of thinking before. So yeah, and then it probably will still be somebody else who comes in as head of recruitment, who's totally in charge of the transfer side of the club. So it's going to be a total different change, but at the moment we don't have any of these guys and we need them ASAP. And I guess that is the problem. Other big clubs, you know, don't want to give up their best guys either.
Yeah, I heard someone say that. I think it was in Telegraph. I read something that Dan Ashworth's at Newcastle will be the Tonali signing. Obviously, Tonali's now got another ban coming up, but I wouldn't say read much about that. You could say you do your due diligence, but how is? I mean, there's zero way that he would have known about Tonali's. Well, potentially the Italy one, but there's no way he could have known about the recent one, because that was in, I think, between August and October, wasn't it? Or something like that. So, I mean, it's just like anyone, you hire anyone for a job, you do your references, but you don't know if they're a serial killer at the end of the day. You just hope they're not. I wouldn't put too much stock into that.
No, I don't give any blame for things like Tonali to him. I read this article as well. In fact, somebody had posted it in the podcast thread on Red Cafe. It was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek article, and it kind of started putting a bit of blame on Ashworth for not only Tonali. It went back to when he was involved in the England setup, and he was there when Sam Allardyce was England manager, and obviously only lasted one game in controversial circumstances. But again, I don't put any of that blame on Dan Ashworth. You know, this is just mess-ups by the individuals and not really things that you can particularly foresee. Yeah, as I say, things have gone a bit quiet on the Ashworth side. I said on this podcast as soon as it happened that I can absolutely see Saudi Arabia at Newcastle United saying, listen, we're not going to give anything on this. If you want him, you pay what we're asking for, or he's going to sit out. I think they're talking about 2 years, not even 1 year, aren't they? And they're like 18 months or something like that.
Yeah, 2 years.
He's going to sit out 18 months, like the rest of this season and the whole of next season. And they're like, we don't care. You know, they still have to pay his salary, and most clubs obviously wouldn't want to do that, but Saudi will go, yeah, we'll pay it just to stop you from having him. And yeah, I can totally see that. Whereas I can't see somebody like Southampton doing that, wanting to pay Jason Wilcox for, I think they're talking about 6 months or something. I don't think his gardening leave contractually will be anywhere near what Dan Ashworth's was. But yeah, I mean, interestingly, Jason Wilcox was actually for many years at Manchester City. He was a coach there. He worked his way up to be director of their academy. And I assume he worked with Omar Berada at that time. You know, they were at City at the same time. He only actually went to Southampton last year, January 2023. So he's only been there just over a year, basically. And he got a step up. He went from kind of academy director at Manchester City to director of football at Manchester United, at Southampton. He won't be coming as director of football to us, I don't think. It's still supposed to be Dan Ashworth with Jason Wilcox below him. But he obviously wants the job because, like Dan Ashworth, he has resigned from his position. And I guess the clubs are going to be negotiating. I read that Manchester United, we have offered to pay up his contract, basically, for the rest of the season as kind of compensation. But Southampton aren't happy with that. So, yeah, but again, we wait and see what happens. And we're still expecting, you know, other incomings. As I said, there should be head of recruitments. There's other names out there, whether it's Mitchell, whether it's Freeman. We need somebody in, though. And, you know, there's still as well the likes of John Myrtle, Darren Fletcher are still in jobs. So there is at least people there doing something. What exactly, whether they're part of the long-term thinking of the club, who knows?
Probably not. Cleaning out the desks, that's what they're probably doing. Taking 3 months to clean out the desks.
Yeah, I mean, look, they did get rid of Richard Arnold, but I guess they needed some people in place to keep things ticking over until somebody else comes in. But yeah, as I said, we don't know. At the moment, they are still doing their jobs. You know, we know Myrtle was out in Barcelona and Spain recently meeting with Real Madrid, meeting with Barcelona and other clubs. We don't know what exactly it was about. So, yeah, he is still jetting around doing whatever job he does exactly for the moment. But, yeah, where he'll be in the summertime, we don't know. And, yeah, on the women's side, there has been a new guy come in. Matt Johnson is the new head of the women's team. So there is at least somebody coming there. But he's an internal promotion. He was in charge of MU Foundation. You know, they do a lot of the kind of charity work, things around the community, around Manchester. But at the moment, the whole women's academy is under MU Foundation because it's a newish thing. It's not tied in with like the men's academy. So It's called the Elite Talent Centre, and it's like girls even from kind of 8, 9 years of age go and be involved in there at Man United, and he was in charge of that. So I guess it's kind of a natural step up for him to go from overseeing the more youth girls' side. He's now fully in charge of MU Women. It was Polly Bancroft who'd moved on from there. So at least somebody's in there, and hopefully he can keep working over there. I've just got my tickets for... There's a Chelsea doubleheader coming on. There's a good deal at the moment, £22. You get a ticket for the Women's FA Cup semi-final versus Chelsea at Lee Sports Village, plus Man United Women versus Chelsea at Old Trafford, last game of the season, for £22. So, yeah, I'll give a bit of promotion for the women's team tickets there.
See us lose twice to Chelsea.
Yeah, bit more hopeful about the one at Lee Sports Village. Yeah, I don't expect... I mean, yeah, I was at the Women's Manchester Derby earlier in the season, thoroughly outplayed. The women are not having a good season at all. I think we're even like fifth now behind Liverpool. That's, you know, getting worse and worse. Like, we're not even in contention for anything there. So, yeah, it's only the FA Cup to go. So, yeah, I'll still go. Like I say, it's still a good day out. I've not done Lee Sports Village this season. I've watched the women at Old Trafford. But yeah, we'll go down for that. And as I say, for a cheap day out, you can't knock it. About a tenner compared to, you know, £50 for going to the men's games. But yeah, so at least some appointments are happening. But yeah, on the men's side, that's the biggest problem. No improvement in the boardroom yet. And you worry if these guys don't come in until summer, then does that kind of write off the whole of next season almost?
I mean, who knows? I wouldn't have thought so. You'd think they've got stuff in play for the summer already, and there's plans and they're working on stuff. But there's also the issues around manager as well, and that'll hold things up as well. So, I mean, we don't know whether he's going to be in the job ultimately, do we?
Yeah, we definitely don't. And, you know, since Ineos have taken over very recently, they've seen us lose to Fulham. They've seen us struggle to a draw against Brentford. On the other side, they've seen us beat Liverpool with a crazy extra time last minute winner.
I think it comes down to the FA Cup ultimately. I think if we win that, I think he'll keep his job. However, I don't see, unless our best chance of winning the FA Cup is if Chelsea beat City, and then in a final between Man United and Chelsea, who knows, anything could happen. We could both out crap each other. And I don't think City haven't beat Chelsea this season yet. So there is something there. But, yeah, I just don't see us winning that trophy. And I don't see us... I think Champions League's gone, so I think he will be gone. It's just when, I think.
Yeah, for me...
will be the question.
At this point, when you start getting... even if you win the FA Cup, there's still major question marks about how we're playing, like I say, this chaos ball giving away...
Oh, same for me. I'm just thinking what Ineos will think and what they're... I think if you've got an FA Cup win, I think they might give him more time. I personally have massive issues with how we're playing and the structure of the team and all that stuff. I would like to see him move on, but I'm just trying to get into the mind of Ineos.
No, and as I say, they've got this kind of similar decision on both the men and women's side. You know, a lot of the women's supporters want Mark Skinner out in the women's team, but because they've got so much focus on working out the boardroom, both of these managers may get an extra chance that possibly they don't deserve. And at the same time, I would like to see Erik ten Hag get a chance with a proper structure to see what he can do. There is those question marks that you can't get past, even for me now. You know, I will, whatever happens, I will be happy to give Erik ten Hag till the end of the season. And assess then if he wins a cup, if he can get us in the Champions League, then I say maybe he gets a chance to have another summer and another crack at it with a proper structure above him. But the biggest problem for me is there isn't any progress in these things, particularly the midfield. It's the whole midfield situation where we're giving away too many chances. I can't quite still work out what he wants to do there. Can this really be his plan? To be giving away this many chances game after game after game. And it seems to go back to a kind of almost Ole ball style of just hoping for the best on the counter-attack. And Ole did it better.
Ole did it with two sitting midfielders and a try to keep it tight and compact, at least in defence. We just keep it open completely and then still try to get on the counter-attack. Like I said, we thrive when the game turns to chaos, and it's not really a great sign because it means there's no control happening because it's all chaos related.
Yeah, and the only bit of the season that gives you some hope around what Ten Hag wants to do was that one period where we had nearly a fit squad and we had our best kind of run of the season. You know, there were also actually two runs. I think there was one back kind of Octoberish time and that one run a couple of months ago. And where you say a lot of the players were available and things did look a lot better. So, yeah, it is the one bit of hope around it. And apart from that, there's the constant changes around centre mid, the constant changes around centre back, which is, of course, your absolute core of the team. And yet again, as I said, in that Brentford game, the two starting centre backs don't last the game and everything's chopped and changed and half fit people are coming in and out. So, yeah, I'm definitely not fighting for Erik ten Hag to stay in this job, but I will give him till the end of the season, see where we're at. And I assume Ineos are in a similar place. I mean, there's constant links to other managers as well. I mean, I think we mentioned Graham Potter on a previous podcast. Since this international break, there's been a load of focus on Gareth Southgate. I mean, yeah, I don't know what you think about him as a name thrown in the mix.
I think Southgate gets a slightly bad rep as England manager. He is too negative in general, and it is this England team are talented enough that we probably should have won it, but won something. But then there is, you know, it's tournament football; things can happen. Ultimately, he's got us to a final and a semi-final, and then the last World Cup we lost to the eventual finalists in a tight game where Harry Kane missed a penalty. So on that front, yes. On the front, he put players with a handbrake on, but he's ultimately a vibes man. That's why he's done well for England. He's set up the right vibe around the camp. He's set up a right environment for these players where they want to, you know, play for England. The pressure seems to be off them playing for England now. They actually enjoy playing for England. And that's where Southgate has done a good job. He's really revamped what it means to play for England for these players. And that's great. You know, he's a good vibes manager. He's in no way, shape or form a club football manager, though. And if we're going to do that, we might as well get Ole back, the ultimate vibes manager. It would be a truly disastrous appointment to get Gareth Southgate in, because tactically there's no way he's a fit for Man United or any club side. I just don't see how Southgate operates well at any decent club level. At most, maybe a lower to middling Premier League team, maybe, where he sets a good environment. But it's England get by on the fact that we have very, very good footballers who play for England. Not necessarily. And Southgate gives them an environment to play in, not necessarily because he is doing anything especially good on the pitch.
I think that's a good point for another quick break before we come back for part three of the show. Back for the last part of the show. Yeah, look, we're talking about alternative options to Erik ten Hag. As I said, there'd been a lot of press media around Gareth Southgate being an option. I doubt he's like high on the list for Ineos. I'm sure they're just looking at potential other options. I'm sure they have a list of several names. They will definitely be thinking about it, even if, and I don't think that means that they've decided Erik ten Hag is going either. They just will be keeping their options open. And of course, we talk about the fact that, you know, we don't have this board in place yet. Ashworth isn't there yet. Berada isn't there yet. Wilcox isn't there yet. But Sir Jim Ratcliffe is there. Sir David Brailsford is there. And Ineos do have this whole kind of sporting board at their own company. There's also Jean-Claude Blanc is on that board. So at kind of their own level, they are probably working out all these things outside of the club. It's more about getting the people in the club working on a day-to-day basis.
You missed the weirder link was the Gary O'Neill one.
I reckon there's just a whole list of names.
Gary O'Neill was for a coaching role, which was very odd. Like, why would a Premier League manager want to come to us and be a coach? Doesn't make much sense to me. So that was a weird one. I actually rate Gary O'Neill. I think he's doing a really good job at Wolves. But yeah, weird.
Yeah, but none of these managers should really be the kind of names that are being linked with Manchester United. Oh, I mean, for me, first of all, the bare minimum should be that you've won something. And none of these managers have won anything. They've all done good jobs at middle-range clubs. Or, all right, Southgate's done. I actually think Southgate has done a good job for England. Many people don't agree and say that he's failed or whatever. But I've seen much better England managers fail much more miserably. And whether it was Sven, Capello, there's a whole list of them who actually did have great winning records. But when it came to managing England, couldn't get anywhere past a quarter final, whereas Southgate has done that, so you can't really argue with that. But yeah, club football is a whole different deal. I think one of the things that we're now seeing is because Ineos want to put in this massive board, head of recruitment, technical director, it means the manager's job is a different. They're not a manager, they are just a coach. They're clearly not wanting a manager probably to get involved at all in transfer side of things. And some clubs do it like that. And this has been a big issue for us. I mean, we know that Erik ten Hag really wanted to be involved in the transfer side of things. And, you know, we keep having debates on how successful that's been. I don't think it's maybe quite as bad as some people make out, but there has been some real high profile mess ups, Anthony being the top of that list. And they clearly want to move away from that, where the manager is not having any say in the transfers and they are just a coach. And maybe that's why names like Southgate, I think like O'Neill, are thrown out there. Because O'Neill's gone in at Wolves when, what was his name? The Spanish guy had gone in and left very quickly because he said he wasn't getting any support, basically. Lopetegui, wasn't it?
Yeah, Lopetegui.
And came in and left because he said, well, but basically there's nothing in the transfer budget. So it's not what I was promised, whereas O'Neill was happy to take on that job and has done well. But yeah, they're not managers of the calibre that should be getting connected to Manchester United, in my opinion. But then the only question is, who is out there? Who would we be going for? I don't know if you've got any other name that you'd like on it.
I mean, God knows at this point. Ruben Amorim is always the big name tied at the moment. I know Liverpool, he's been touted for the Liverpool job now that Alonso's been ruled out of that. There's obviously De Zerbi, who I'm still not sure about De Zerbi. Potter's lurking around somewhere doing something. But then, there's not a great depth to the market. And when you think that Bayern and Liverpool and Barca are all new managers, it's going to be an interesting summer. Oh, yeah, there's also Thomas Tuchel as well. But again, I wouldn't really like to see that happen either.
I mean, out of all those names, the only one that for me does at least fit the bill of having some kind of winning record is Thomas Tuchel. He does also know the Premier League. I think he was very unlucky to get turfed out of Chelsea. And I think that was similar to Ineos, a new regime coming in and wanting to bring in their own man because he was there when they kind of arrived. But yeah, he's the only one for me who at least has some proper kind of winning record there and is worthy of being a Manchester United manager. You know, he's won the Champions League, he's won other cups and trophies. You know, apart from that, you're basically giving somebody who's done a good job at a mid-range club a massive step up, and it's what Chelsea did with Potter. It didn't work out. Again, you could say though that what was happening above him at Chelsea was as much of a mess, maybe even more than what we have. And maybe he didn't ever have a chance there. I mean, I know you've always liked him, haven't you?
I thought he did a great job at Brighton. Obviously, the stuff at Chelsea, though, kind of does count against him massively. I don't think he should be United manager. I just don't know who should be. That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, I think that leads on pretty well to our next match, which is Thursday night against Chelsea. And yeah, Liverpool on the weekend. But yeah, first of all, Chelsea away. So yeah, two awful games for our away fans who've had to end up with late night trips to London with no way of getting back to Manchester. So yeah, you basically have to spend the night over there more or less, or spend all night on like a 6-hour bus journey or something. But yeah, Chelsea coming up. They're the only ones who make us feel good about ourselves this season. Spend even more money and done even worse. A very erratic form, just like us, you know, winning a couple in there, a few draws, a few losses. We've actually got a pretty decent record against them recently. In our last six, we have not actually lost to Chelsea, beaten them twice and drew against them four times. Again, you don't know. Like us, you don't know what you're going to get with Chelsea. There is some good players there. Cole Palmer obviously being the standout for them this season. But you don't know. You go on. And Pochettino, you know, he was often linked with us again and again and again and is slightly now struggling in a chance at, you know, a big potential top six Champions League club.
Yeah, I mean, this game, I mean, yeah, like it's just two teams trying to out crap each other. I can see us actually doing well though, because you can see this game descending into madness. And if it descends into madness, then I think we'll do all right. And if we're like just going tit for tat and going back and forth, you could see it being a high scoring affair. It could be something like a 3-3, 3-2, 4-3 kind of game. And yeah, we could potentially get a result, and then, you know, that's another corner turned only for us to lose to Liverpool on the weekend.
Yeah, look, we beat Chelsea 2-1 just before Christmas. We beat them 4-1 right at the end of last season. So, yeah, we'll see what throws out over there. But, yeah, Liverpool then coming up. I remember earlier on we had that chat when I said, look, these two Liverpool games are coming up. If you had to pick one of them, which one it had to be? And I think we both said the FA Cup game. But now we've got this league game coming. Arsenal and City drawing on the weekend gave advantage to Liverpool in the Premier League. So there's huge, huge incentive for us now to try and get some points off them to stop them going for this league again.
I don't think we'll do it. I think I can't. Just the idea of beating Liverpool twice in a row seems a bit far-fetched to me. I don't know. Obviously, I'd love it if we did. I did say I just want us to beat them once. We've beaten them once, so now, you know, I can't ask for us to beat them twice. They're going all right at the top of the league. I feel like they'll be a bit more up for it than we will be, maybe. I don't know. I feel like this title race is going to go down to the wire, and I don't see us throwing a spanner in the works by beating Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to believe that in the kind of form we've been in that we could beat Liverpool twice in the space of a few weeks. Maybe a draw out there is possible. But, you know, our worst case scenario is, of course, Liverpool winning this league. I still put my hopes in Arsenal, but it's very difficult to do that. You know, Arsenal, who bottle them job as much as their North London neighbours Tottenham do. You know, they have been playing very well. But yeah, it's difficult to put a lot of faith in them doing anything. And then it doesn't feel great anymore to support City, because they'd be now going for that four in a row. You know, they equaled our three in a row. So yeah, that's not really a good option now either. So yeah, where are we at now? It used to be still the lesser of the evil City, but now, yeah, don't really want that anymore either. I mean, let's not forget, and yeah, I did see this. They had the programme about Jason Wilcox earlier, and they were giving a bit of his background. And, you know, obviously he played for years for Blackburn Rovers. He was part of that Blackburn Rovers team that did win that one title. And, of course, that's as many Premier League titles as Liverpool have at the moment. I think we should make sure we mention this as much as possible, because we might not be able to say it for that much longer.
The only positive, well, I say positive, it's not a positive thing, but the only thing about Liverpool winning the league is I just don't, once Klopp leaves, I don't see them winning it again for a while. So it could be, yeah, they'll get two, but then they won't get one for a long, long time afterwards. Whereas obviously City will get that four in a row, which has never been done before. But then obviously if with City, everything's an asterisk.
Yeah, so City, everything is an asterisk. The big problem with Liverpool as well is, of course, we still do have our 20 times titles over them. You know, we are still the best domestic English club. That will bring them back kind of equal with us again. As I say, we need to make sure we mention on this podcast, mention it to all your Scouse mates if you have any. I've tried to cut out any people I know who support Liverpool. Unfortunately, do still know a few from playing football with them and such things. But make sure you mention to them, though, as many times as you can, Liverpool are in the same boat as Blackburn Rovers and Leicester City on one Premier League title right now. We may not have that much longer to be throwing this stat out. So, yeah, make the most of it on a weekly basis. But yeah, we've got it. You know, this is our chance. And you would say we have beaten them once. It was an absolutely insane game. You can't imagine that we will have an insane game like that again. I mean, earlier in the season, it was a totally different game where we churned out that kind of draw at Anfield. So yeah, we do have some hope. We've played them twice this season. We've not lost to them yet. Of course, horror memories off the game last season. But yeah, that was at Anfield, not at Old Trafford. I assume you'll be in the stadium for this one.
Yep, I'll be there for another stressful day at Old Trafford, I imagine. Wouldn't it be nice if we just won 4-0?
It would be nice if we won 1-0. Absolutely ecstatic. Absolutely ecstatic. I mean, as I said, we can't really expect anything like the one we've just had, which was just an insane game. You know, one of the craziest I can remember. I mean, I tried to look it up. I don't think, and I definitely don't remember, that we've ever won a game in extra time at Old Trafford before. I definitely don't remember it. I can remember us going to penalty shootout. So we've had extra time at Old Trafford before, but I do not remember in my life of going, and maybe somebody can come out and correct us, have Manchester United ever won a game in Old Trafford in extra time? I don't believe it's ever happened before.
I don't think so. It was one of the Europas.
No, I don't think so, because it would only go to extra time if we were bang even on aggregate after two legs.
I don't think so then.
Yeah, we've had extra time in finals at neutral stadiums. I don't ever remember it being at Old Trafford. As I said, we may need to get one of the Red Cafe historians on this or something and see if they can find anything back in the day. But I don't remember it. Definitely don't remember it. So it was an absolute unique occasion for so many reasons. As I said, we can't expect anything like that. And yeah, I would happily take a 0-0 board draw right now as well.
100%.
I would take that.
Yeah, bite your hand off for that.
Yeah, I would take it. Because as I said, after we've had a draw with them, after we've beaten them, I think expecting to get another 3 points is probably a bit too much.
Yeah, the only thing you could say, it could be one of those weird things where we've had a dreadful, dreadful season. It's been really bad, and yet Liverpool didn't beat us once in it. Could be one of those quirks.
And to be fair, this used to happen to us when we were, you know, under Fergie. When we were still winning trophies, we'd often lose some of those big games, whether it was to Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City. We didn't always have the greatest big game record, but he always just made sure we'd rolled over in all the ones we should have won. And Liverpool, you know, they would often... We are now, like I said, for that FA Cup team, we were the game-raising team. And maybe, yeah, maybe they can raise it again. And as I said, the bit of hope is that players are coming back from injury. If we can get another 90 minutes out for Lisandro Martinez against Chelsea, Casemiro back in there, if they can get back towards match fitness, then that does give us some hope. As I said, not in the last game, but before that, that kind of Bruno, Rashford, Garnacho, Hoyland four were hitting well and scoring goals, creating chances. It's just been like, yeah, defensively, we've been a bit of a mess. And yeah, Martinez and Casemiro should help to sort that out massively. So, yeah, I hope, like I said, they both start this Chelsea game. They both can get back to somewhere towards full fitness and, yeah, do the business with Liverpool coming back on the weekend.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, hopefully we don't lose.
Yes, we will come back to you, of course, after those two games. I think, is it FA Cup semi-final after that, or is there one more league game? No, we do have one more league game after that. I think it's then Bournemouth before then we've got the FA Cup semi-final against Coventry City. We will talk about all that on the next show. I think that's probably all it from now. As I said, we're Chelsea coming up, Liverpool coming up, and yeah, we will back next week after those two matches and see where we're at. Apart from that, good night from me.
Yep, cheers everyone.
Sports Social Podcast Network.